Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, June 11th. I'm Ray Graff. It's Gardening Today, and we welcome back Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. Do you have a gardening question? This is your chance. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email your question, and many people have done that already. VoxPop@WAMC.org is the email, VoxPop@WAMC.org, or 800-348-2551. We have Fred here, we have Greg here, we have Dale Isla here, and you're over there. Give us a call over here, and we'll get your gardening calls in. It all begins right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. You ready to talk gardening? We're ready. Fred Breglia is here from the Landis Arboretum. Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery and Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch. They're all here to answer your questions about making your garden grow even better. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or again, 800-348-2551. Gardening Today. Fred, Greg, Dale Isla, welcome back. How are you?
Good. Thanks
Great.
For having us, right?
Well,
everybody
well.
Having a lovely hot summer day. Good heavens.
Yeah. It is hot.
It's a hot one.
It's been pretty soon. You know, May was pretty chilly overall, and so like vegetables,
yeah.
You know, especially the warm weather vegetables, right? I mean, Dale Isla can plant hers anytime she wants.
Right.
But, you know, people were holding back, and so June became the official planting week, you know, the first week of June for the Berkshires, which is usually, it's about a week late.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah. And it's good that people did hold back because at least in Steventown, we had frost on May 31st. We got down to 30 degrees and everything was white. And I was very glad that we were delayed in getting our fields ready because otherwise I would have been out at 10 o'clock at night covering up plants in the field.
That's right. We also had a frost warning. It never did hit too bad, but it certainly could have. So we were pushing it over in aspirins.
Speaking of night, it has been somewhat dry, I would say, around these parts.
It's getting dry out there, for sure.
Now, the question that my gardener asks is, why is it not generally okay to water close to nightfall?
The theory is that the leaves will stay wet overnight, and that when you have droplets of water on foliage for an extended period of time, that is the potential incubus for a spore of a fungus to hatch, basically.
Okay. And so we discussed the possible options. That was one. And I said, but in nature, it rains at night.
So it does. It does. So, you know, when you get those occasional rains, plants are going to deal with it. But if you have a choice to do a weekly irrigation or twice weekly irrigation, we're talking about doing it. If you're doing like a drip irrigation or watering the root system, then it's okay in the evening. It's really about getting the foliage wet, like Greg said. It's just a good protocol to reduce the likelihood of fungal diseases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really encourage people to look into putting in some drip systems. Yep. They're easy. They're inexpensive. You can put them on timers. We have everything on our farm on timers. And actually, with it getting so dry lately, my irrigation pump at my pond is now turning on at 2 a.m. and turning off at 5 a.m. Cheap electric rates, and my blueberries are getting watered every night. And
oh, nice. And how are things at the Berry Patch, by the way?
The crops are looking good. The blueberries are just finishing bloom now, which is quite late for us. It's about a week later than normal. And the early ones are sizing up, and we're harvesting lots of cucumbers, and the baby crop of strawberries is finishing up, and the raspberries are growing, and the perennials are looking outstanding.
Okay, and you brought a lovely yellow leafed plant with some orange stuff on it. What is that?
That is a canna lily, and all the perennials are just outstanding this year with the cool May, but lots of sunshine. And this canna lily is one of my favorite perennials. It's bright yellow with these orange freckles all over it. And the thing I really like about canna lilies is that it puts up sprouts all summer long, and each one of these sprouts that comes up then also puts up a flower stalk.
It's a beautiful plant. I don't think I've ever seen one of those before.
Yeah, this one is a newer variety.
Greg just gave me the side eye. What? I never saw a canna lily.
You've seen them. You just don't know that you've seen them.
You're saying I'm a dope.
Nope. I'm just saying you thought they were something else.
800-348-2551 if you have a gardening question for our crew today. Email is voxpop@wamc.org.
Can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
Just one more, though. Yeah, but it's about water. It's about your question about watering.
Yeah.
That if it's evening and your plants need water desperately, don't hold back.
Okay.
Right. Get it done.
If you're going to do it once.
Yeah, like the rain. It's okay.
Yeah,
get them hydrated. Okay. That's the most important thing.
All right. This email came in. It's rather extensive from Carrie. It came in very early this morning. Carrie in Durham writes, I'm having some trouble with my strawberries. They looked great early this spring, and then when I went back to check on them, half of the leaves had died, turned brown, mostly on the lower half of the plant, not on the top, so I'm thinking it was lack of water and not frost. I've been giving them water since. They do slowly seem to be coming back to life. I put compost around them early this spring. Last week, put some grass clippings around them as fertilizer. Anything else I should be doing? That's from Carrie.
Yeah, that's the old, a picture would be worth a thousand words.
Yeah.
So, Carrie, if you want to send one to me after the show, I would be happy to look at them. It does sound like it might be water.
Okay.
But strawberries this year, a lot of them had kind of a rough winter. And if they didn't have a lot of mulch on them over the winter, they probably wound up with some root and crown damage, either from soil-borne diseases or they just froze this winter with the cold if they didn't have good insulation. So water will help as long as it's not too much. You have to be careful about fertilizing them too much in the spring. But I think if Carrie could just send an email to me through our website, theberrypatch.net.
Theberrypatch.net, all one word.
And
okay.
Those brown leaves that are down below, possibly from last year, it could just be new growth on top of old.
All right.
Well, except she said they looked good early in the year
and
then turned brown.
Yeah, they looked great early this spring. All right, second question from Carrie is about slugs. What's the best way to keep them away from the strawberries?
So that, my favorite, and what we used to do when we did field strawberries was pie plates full of beer that are set down in the soil.
What?
It attracts the slugs. Get the cheapest beer you can find. They love it.
PBR is the way to go.
Hey, now, wait a minute. Don't you be dissing Pabst Blue Ribbon. Cut it out.
Yeah.
So really, the slugs get hammered, and then what happens?
They drown.
They drown in it. They go into the... I've even used old Frisbees that work real well, too.
You're kidding me. Upside down Frisbees.
You're at ground level, cheap beer seems to work better, but hey, we're not going to use good beer for this. And the slugs will go right in and they'll drown. You could also use a diatomaceous earth, which is like a volcanic like grit.
Yeah.
And it sort of cuts them and makes them not want to. It discourages them from wanting to crawling in the area. So, you know, those two things, it's your 1-2 punch.
That is so interesting.
Yeah. The other thing is to not have the mulch too close to the strawberry. Not a thick, thick mulch underneath the berries.
All right. A couple more emails. Then we'll take a break and hit the phones. It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. 800-348-2551 is the number. This one from Susan in Bennington, Vermont. I have removed 3 dead viburnum Chicago luster that were demolished by viburnum leaf beetles. I have 3 Shasta viburnum to replace them. I want to put them in the same place. Do I need to treat the soil where the dead ones were before I replant? Your advice to give them the best chance of thriving?
You don't need to treat the soil because the insects are going to come to the plant.
Yeah, and viburnum leaf beetle does not... They're not interested in Shasta viburnums. So it's very specific.
It loves arrowwood.
Basically, the native viburnums, and Shasta is not a native plant. So the arrowwood viburnums were their favorite or are their favorite.
Yep.
The American cranberry viburnums are also something they definitely were devouring quite a bit. A couple of other viburnums that they were bothering. What we found in the Berkshires, this happened about probably about 20 years ago. I hate to say 20 years because I used to say every five years and suddenly it's 20 years now. But the viburnum leaf beetles moved in, really devastated the especially the arrowwood types, the dentatums, Chicago luster being one.
Right.
And they've actually leveled off. You can now find lots of native arrowwood viburnums that are either barely bitten or not bitten at all. And I think that it's perfect bird food right now. Those little grubs are feeding on the leaves, and the warblers come in and take them away.
Yep.
Are robins one of those?
And robins as well.
I've seen robins in our backyard in the back 40 just digging in the ground or at dusk.
These are like little greenish, short little greenish worms that are on the leaves of your shrub.
Oh, yeah, it's going to become the future. That's the larva for the future beetle. And that's what makes a viburnum leaf beetle bad is that it gives you a 1-2 punch. The larva eats the leaves. And then it turns into a beetle, and they come back and eat the leaves.
Yes. Susan adds, I've since learned that the Shasta viburnum is considered invasive, but that's what I have.
Yeah, so far that is not true, I believe.
Aha.
It is not listed as an invasive plant.
One more email, maybe two, and then we'll hit the break and then the phones. 800-348-2551. This one's from Tom in Gardner, Mass. Very simple. Where have all the lilacs gone? None this year in central Massachusetts. None.
Flowers?
Yeah.
I saw quite a bit of blooms this year around us. I know lilacs have been taking beatings from the fungal problems that they've had the last number of years. But
I wonder if a frost
that's
got
what I'm
them.
Wondering.
That hard freeze back in late April. It might have gotten
it's
them.
Possible.
And they, you know, they as we've talked before, they cycle. We can have heavy bloom years and light bloom years. If the plants bloomed heavily last year and all the seed heads were allowed to ripen, you know, that takes energy away from the plant and that makes the new growth that comes that year less likely to have flower buds on it.
Yeah, our lilacs are looking pretty good.
Yeah, or if they pruned them at the wrong time, that would give you a healthy shrub with no flowers. So if you want to prune a lilac, generally right after it blooms is the time. So if you pruned it much later than that, the buds are set up for next year. Every time you prune, you're taking away next year's flowers. So that's another option.
And so if there's no flowers this year, next year it's likely there'll be lots.
Yep. Okay, that's good news.
And don't prune it. In terms of taking, this time of year, I'd leave it alone.
Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. We'll hit the email bag again a little later in the show. But it's time for calls. And Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs are here. We'll be back. Yeah, a little Frank Rossellino there for you on the trombone. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff here, and it's The Gardening Show, joined by Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, and Fred Breglia. Very quickly before the first call, Fred, things are happening at the Landis.
They are. We are celebrating our 75th anniversary this year of being an arboretum, which is great. We're also celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Native Plant Trail and the 20th anniversary of our 5K. And as part of our summer celebration, we're hosting a free talk this coming Sunday at 2 p.m. We're going to have an old growth forest expert, big tree expert. The guy who literally wrote the book on how to measure big trees. He wrote many books, Sierra Club Guide to Ancient Forests of the Northeast, and so forth and so on. And his name is Bob Leverett. If you've never got a chance to see him or hear him talk, they call him the old growth evangelist, and for a reason. He's been preaching saving the trees for a really long time. I've known him for 25 years, maybe more now, and it's going to be at the Landis Arboretum this Sunday. You don't need to reserve a spot. Just come on out. It's free.
Cool.
We'll have hors d'oeuvres there as well. It starts at 2 p.m.
What kind of hors d'oeuvres? You have those little hot dogs and the biscuits?
They usually do a good job.
Delicious,
I don't handle that. I don't handle that component.
All right. 800.
I'm there to eat it.
Oh, yeah, I guess you are. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. The ancient forests, really quickly before the first call.
Yep.
I mean, we had an ice age, so they're not 10,000 years old. How old are these forests?
Well, I mean, they've all certainly evolved after the Ice Age. So a lot, depending on the area or the world you're living in, let's put it this way. The oldest trees in the world are over 5,000 years old.
Right.
The oldest, redwoods are all in the 3,000 year range.
Out in California,
Yep. And the East Coast, the oldest trees east of the Mississippi are approaching 2,800 years old.
Yeah.
So I mean, we're talking some pretty old trees. And the oldest in New York is actually right around 1,000.
Yeah. Really?
Yep. And there are white cedars in the Niagara Escarpment.
That is incredible.
From New York and runs into Canada. So upwards of 1,000 years.
And pests haven't gotten to them.
You know, they survived. They survived a lot. I mean, sometimes they do. Sometimes they succumb to things. But we're trying to protect the last little bits of it, and then we're also trying to get more and more secondary old growth forests, what we call second growth forests, to get older. Mm. So we get, in essence, you're getting more old growth.
It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. John is in Gilderland Center. Hello, John. How are you?
I'm good, Ray. Thank you. I have two questions.
Sure.
The first question is, the Times Union had an AP article on Sunday about garden myths. One of them was that you shouldn't water little bits every day. You should do a deep watering. And I'm just wondering if any of you have some rule of thumb or advice on how to figure out about that.
I bet they do.
And then I got one other question. I was in the hardware store, and I was looking at herbicides, and I noticed that, and maybe you don't want to answer this one, but I noticed that a few of the formulations have both contact herbicides and systemic, you know, the contact being the one that kills everything it touches, the systemics being the one that goes through the plant. And I was just wondering, if you have a contact herbicide in with a systemic, do you kill too much of the plant so the thing didn't work?
Oh, okay.
So watering and herbicide. Yep.
So, right. Good questions. Watering, I guess I'll touch on real quickly. So frequent light waterings encourage shallow roots on plants. So you want to do less frequent but more thorough watering. And the way that we figure it out is, and a lot of people have said, you know, how long do you run it? How much water do you put down? You really got to, it's every site's a little bit different. Every soil is a little bit different. When in doubt, run your either irrigation system or your hose or your drip emitters and let it run for a little while, 15, 20 minutes. Dig a hole. Use a little boring, either a soil boring drill, or you can use a shovel. Dig down. How far did it go? And you want to get that water to penetrate down to like 12 inches, 15 inches on most plants, because that's where the main feeder roots are. So, you know, it's going to depend on the site. Sand's going to go down really quickly. Clay, it's going to take a while. And then in general, we recommend one thorough watering a week. New plantings, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah,
maybe
so twice. A new tree or shrub, you want to water very well to get that water all the way to the ground. And that's going to be a foot or more, 18 inches if it's a large tree. If it's a 1 gallon or 2 gallon perennial, that's a foot at the most. That's, 8 or 9 inches down. Yep. And we talked about irrigation systems and running those for some period of time so that, the entire ground gets saturated. The first time around, if you're going to water really well, it's not a problem to overwater. There is no overwatering unless it's, running down the driveway. It's just that once you do that and you get it really nice and saturated, that you let it air out for a few days, maybe a 3 or 4 days or a week before you do it again.
The other thing you can do is if you have potted plants, you can pull that plant out of the pot. I do this with people when I'm training them to water in our greenhouse. They'll put a little bit of water in on each pot, and I'm like, that's not nearly enough. And we just pull the plant right out of the pot, and it's like, oh, yeah, the water only went down about half an inch.
Very interesting.
You can see it as a visual.
And it needs to go down 4 inches. So you could play around with that so that you get a sense of how quickly the water is moving through. It's a little bit different soil type, but it is a great visual.
All right, very quickly, we have a ton of calls. So very quickly, the herbicide question.
Contact herbicides kill through the foliage. So you're applying it to the leaf of the plant, no matter what it is, and that kills that plant or most of that plant right away. Systemic herbicides are usually only applied for seedlings, so they're applied as a granular form and put down on the soil where the seed, they persist for a while in the soil, and as the seed germinates, they die. So I don't know, in Massachusetts, we don't have any liquid form systemic herbicides. So I'm not sure what you were referring to there.
He might be talking about something, you know, like more of the chemical versions that you're spraying on a leaf. It absorbs through the leaf and goes into the root.
Sure.
That's what I'm thinking
he
means.
That's exactly it. And several of the ortho products, maybe even some of the bonide are like that. So that's what I was just saying.
Okay. So at the Arboretum, we don't really use those at all. What we do is actually use more of a contact herbicides, and they're not actually a chemical. They're either vinegars or they're citrus based. And one persistent plant that we found a really good way to get rid of, it's the horsetail. Now we like that plant in its spot because it has a lot of good uses, but in a garden or in rocks, it's really difficult to get rid of. And we found a flamethrower works quite well.
Flamethrower.
It's called a weed dragon. Okay. So it's a little bit dramatic when you call it a flamethrower. It sounds, you know, bigger than it is, but we are using a propane tank. It burns the horsetail right out of the rock.
I gotta say, you never cease to amaze me,
Fred. It really works quite well.
We do that all the time.
Really?
See? Yeah.
You flamethrowers are fun with your flamethrowers. Lynn is in Shelburne Falls. Lynn, you're on.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have lilies, or I think they're Asian lilies, that I planted last year. And they're coming up this year, but they're not looking, you know, real happy. I'm wondering what it is you'd have to do to keep them happy.
So right now lilies should be coming up. They should be these sort of, you know, robust green leafy stems with buds on top.
Long.
And so you're saying they don't look like that?
They're long, leggy, and not necessarily with buds, I can see.
So the crown of the lily should have sort of like a little rosette of sort of firm things right now, and those should be forming buds because it's growing to form buds. That's all it's going to do. There's no way it would grow up and probably not form buds, unless they've been in, you know, an exceptional shade, and then they would look leggy. And so if that's the case, might be a little too late now to get them to flower, but moving them at some point would be really helpful into sun.
Okay. Lynn?
I see. It could be too shady, yes. I have one more little thing. I heard something say taking the buds off of certain things helps.
Go ahead.
Next year, yeah. And I'm wondering, is it good to just take them off of rhododendron and azalea?
It doesn't hurt if you have time to go out and remove the seed heads of rhododendron and azalea, yes.
Okay, Lynn, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551. To Connecticut we go. The entire state. Max occupies the entire state of Connecticut. Max, are you in a specific spot in Connecticut?
Yeah, I'm in a little town called Voluntown, but it's hard to pronounce sometimes.
Fair enough. Yeah, you know I'll screw it up. All right, you're on. Go ahead.
So growing up, I had an enormous rhubarb plant that seemed to just exist on its own through my entire childhood. When I moved, I took some of it with me and transplanted it at my house in Connecticut. And it's doing terrible. And it was only out of the ground for about 3 hours. And I've transplanted it 4 or 5 years ago. And It looks no bigger than one you would buy like in a 6-inch pot. Mm. It's in somewhat sandy soil. After the first caller, I'm going to change my watering schedule. And I snip off the seed heads when they come out because I figured, well, the plant is pushing its energy into the seeds, not the fruit. And that's what I want. So it's all wilted and looks pathetic now. It starts off strong in the spring, but it looks pathetic now.
I wonder if maybe you planted it a little too deep when you transplanted it. I've seen sometimes, I mean, rhubarb can be quite easy to grow, but if it, you know, when you transplant them, I've seen people where you want to match the soil height. And if it's deeper deeper now than what it was, that would be one reason why it would be slow.
And that would be easy to figure out. Just go over to the crown where all the stems come out and start pulling away the soil or the mulch, whatever you have. It should show up within an inch or so that brown tuber should be there.
Right.
And if it's down there a ways, pull it away. And, you know, you can put the mulch back if you want in a little inch or less. But at any soil, pull that away and leave it there for a while and see if it doesn't pick up. The other thing is, if it's been in the ground a few years, even though we're not getting a lot of rain, I would not water it.
Oh, interesting.
They're not big users of water. They're really good at sort of, you know, being, you know, pretty drought tolerant. And so overwatering could easily also make it look like that.
Dale Isla, you agree?
Oh, okay.
It might be, you might basically be making it rot some.
Yeah.
The other thing I would do is just pull the soil away and see if you have some boring type of insects or some vole damage or something like that just under the soil surface. It might be in an area that is allowing some pests to get in.
Okay.
And have you fertilized it at all?
No, I mean, I put when I put it in, I put in like it's in sandy soil, so I put down like a layer of nice topsoil and manure. So I made a nice place for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't. What type of fertilizer should I use?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you were to do like some yearly applications of some compost, you just want something with some nitrogen. We have some partially neglected rhubarb at our place, and anytime that we add some fertilizer to it, they definitely perk way up.
Do you sell that half off if it's partially neglected?
That's right.
Yeah, nice. Max, you want to follow up very quickly, and then we're going to move on.
If I did plant it too deep, can I just peel the surface away, or do I have to dig it up and replant it shallower?
You should be able to just pull that soil back. For now, sure.
But then in September, you could replant it.
Yep.
Okay. Max, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for not making me pronounce the name of your town. Let's go to Judy in Oneonta. Judy, I can say that one. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you very much for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Okay. Please don't be too mad at me. I have a really beautiful, what I suspect is a briar rose or a dog rose, that is growing over around and through a picket fence. I need to replace that fence. I am wondering how aggressive I can be with pruning it back to try to preserve the plant. And I wouldn't ask, except the bees really love it and are all over it, and it's, you know, really a great pollinator plant.
Mm.
So I hope, I know it's not.
We're not going to be mad at you. No judgment here, Judy.
If it's not native, they're going to hate me.
Well, so you can definitely prune it back severely. That's one of the great things about roses is they really tolerate that. It is coming into bloom right now, though, right?
It's finishing up.
Great. Yeah. So as it finishes, you could certainly reduce it to half of its size. You could even, you know, remove some of the thinner stems and leave some of the bigger stems, get the fence in place, and it will grow back.
So if I go more than half, because this thing is enormous, it's probably 12 feet tall at this point, and it spans about 10 feet. And the trunks are, there's three of them, and they're roughly between an inch and a half and 2 inches. If I get more aggressive than 50%, is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, what you want to, when you're done, you could have almost like a, you know, a 3 or 5 big stems without much of any kind of side stems, but enough live wood there for those buds to form. And if they were 3 or 4 feet tall, that would be, you know, that would be okay. I mean, if you really need to do it, you just want to have enough wood for the buds to have a place to come from. Otherwise, it will also come from the ground as well.
All right, Julie.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call. All right, let's grab one more here before the next break. Then we'll check the email bag. Gardening Today with Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, and Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum. Well, she was omnipresent during the fun drive, so let's go now to Joan in Schenectady. Hello, Joan, you're on.
Hello, Ray. Long time no see.
Yeah, it was about 24 hours ago. How you doing?
I'm not as exhausted as I was yesterday, but I'm still laughing about how much fun we all had.
Thank you for doing what you did, and all our volunteers, too. You did great work. Joan, what's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is I want to annoy you with a follow-up question from our April 22nd broadcast.
Okay, well, recording. I'm easily annoyed. Go ahead.
Cool. Greg, you let me know that my mystery plant was a Jacob's ladder. But okay. I can't remember the actual Latin name that you gave me because it sounds too much like Paleo Legopolis.
That's Greek.
I think it's Polymonium.
Yep.
Polymonium. Okay, okay, right. Okay, great, 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 great. No, I got that.
Okay.
And should I trim back after the beautiful flowers? Oh, my goodness, how surprising. Should I trim back the flowering stalks?
Yeah, it makes, you know, then you still have the foliage. It just makes it look a little tidier. Sure.
Got it. Okay. That's pretty much it. I know I could go online, but, oh, I don't.
No, that's right. You don't go online. Ray. Joan, you were great. Thanks so much for your help during the drive, and we'll, of course, hear from you. But we'll see you soon. Thank you. Let's take a break here, Mr. Bowen. 800-348-2551 is the number. Yeah, gardening today. We'll be back and check the email bag. Cal Jader there on Vox Pop. Hey, listen, thanks to everybody who pitched in during the fun drive. It was a beaut, and you once again show us what community is all about. And thanks again. We'll see you in October for yet another fun drive. But thanks again. And if you volunteered or provided food or whatever, you know, from the bottom of our hearts, thank you. Somebody wrote in on the last day of the fun drive. I don't know if I got to read it, but I saw it on the computer. I like the gardening show. I'd like to have it every week.
And cool.
Yeah, and I said, you know, we have enough calls for it, but I think you guys have other things to do as well. So, you know, I think twice a month during
that
the—
That sounds good.
Yeah, so far, so good.
It's a lot of fun, though.
It is fun.
It is a lot of fun.
We all enjoy it.
All right, so, yes, the emails. Yes, we'll do a couple of those. We have way more than we'll get to, but we'll try. This is from Marty and Hadley. The question is for Dale Isla. I noticed an orange salmon color coating on some of my black raspberry plant leaves and wonder if you have any idea what it is, what I can do about it. It almost looks like tiny eggs. It was on a couple of old canes that actually sprouted new leaves. I cut all of it out, sprayed the nearby plants with copper fungicide since someone suggested it might be a fungus. Ideas?
Yeah, that's most likely one of the rusts, and it is a problem on black raspberries. Some blackberries as well, but especially black raspberries. So you did the right thing, prune it out. The copper fungicide is a good idea. Anything you can do to maintain airflow and keep it nice and dry. So water with drip irrigation rather than overhead irrigation. And it is common. It's out in the native environment.
All right. This one's from Marcy in East Greenbush. I'm growing an Atlantic giant pumpkin. I'm not trying to break any records, just trying something new and fun in my backyard. I realize they can grow and spread quite large, 30 feet wide, 30 feet long. That's a huge pumpkin. I've got to say, I can't
huge
even
imagine. Plant.
Oh, it's the plant.
Right.
Yes.
I see now. Marcy says, my available space is smaller than that, particularly the width. I'm wondering if I prune heavily by removing most or all of the secondary vines, will I still be able to grow a sizable pumpkin?
You'll still get a decent-sized pumpkin because genetically the size is there. What I would suggest is getting some type of supports and train those vines upward.
Okay.
So it's not going laterally out across your lawn, but you're still getting all that photosynthetic area from the vines going up.
Will the pumpkins really be giant? I mean, I've seen those.
Yeah, that's the ones that you get, you know, 700 to 1,000-pound pumpkins.
That's enormous.
There's a town in Maine, Demerscotta, they have a pumpkin festival.
Yeah, I've seen the
festival. I've seen that, too.
And some parts of the festival are making a boat out of
right.
the pumpkins.
Wow.
Yes.
I mean, some of them look big enough that if you shellacked them on the inside and outside, you could live in them,
yes.
right?
Yes.
I mean, that's big.
That's big.
I mean, there's
yeah.
a whole society on how to grow those somewhere out there.
So the genetic capability is there. It's not always going to get to be gigantic if it isn't grown optimally.
Do you ever see that thing in the 70s about that cult out in Scotland where they talk to the plant? I swear I didn't hallucinate this way back when, although it's possible. I don't think so. That there was I don't want to call it a cult and cast aspersions, but they grew enormous plants. And there was some sort of spiritual aspect to it. Do you know anything about this?
No.
Okay.
No, sorry.
But a lot of the biggest pumpkin growers do have these top secrets that they don't
yes.
sort of divulge.
Yes.
You know, Is there some truth to it? It's possible.
I think Uncle
possible,
Ray may have imagined it, so we'll just move
may
on.
May have been that as well.
All right, let's just we'll do another email or two, and then we'll go back to the phones. Jill in Mountainville. We planted 3 white oak saplings in 2022 in the half acre of woods we have next to our house. 2 of them doing fine. 3rd one now about 9 feet tall, but shows no sign of branching out. The other 2 are leafed out. The 3rd has smaller, shrunken leaves. We fertilized the 3rd one in the fall and early spring with Plant Tone tree formula. What could be wrong? What can we do? That's from Jill in Mountainville.
Well, no leaves at this point is not a good thing. I would say that one might be finished.
At this stage of the game, it would need leaves.
Especially with all this nice warm weather now, it really should have budded out. Yep. So something did it in over the winter, or it went into the fall stressed. The 2nd one said curly leaves, same kind of thing. I'd like to see the curls, I guess, to...
Yeah, it makes me think. I mean, it's too early in the year for anthracnose. It, you know, oaks do get a little bit of that fungal things, but it makes me wonder if something's maybe eating it.
Yeah. Aphids or a leaf roller, maybe?
That's what I'm wondering. Something's attacking that. I would advise folks to take a look, real close look at those leaves, the ones that are curled, to see if you see any type of insect or evidence of insects.
Do you need a magnifying glass?
Sometimes you need a little hand lens, yeah.
Okay. Yep. All right, this one is from John, and then we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. John writes in, watering when it's hot. Hey, I know there's been a lot of talk about watering, says John, but is it bad to water in the middle of a hot day like today?
I would go back to, if they're wilted and they need water, don't hesitate. Otherwise, yeah, it'd be better if it was a little cooler for you because it's hot out there.
And also, the plants... The water will evaporate from the soil surface faster if you're watering in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
So it would be better to do it in the morning, or as long as you're not touching the foliage, to do it in the evening is fine.
I send my gardener out very early in the morning when I'm having my coffee.
Yeah, we try to do most irrigation at the arb in the morning, generally. But again, if it's dry, anytime is good.
I forget in the morning and get home at night, and then I water because... I'm going to forget again the next morning.
Why don't you send one of your employees over?
To my house?
Yeah. Head on over.
I have one just like you. That's who
I really? Oh, that. Oh, you have your own gardener too. Oh, yes. Good for you. All right, maybe we should just drop that subject to go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. And now to Melanie, who's in Harrison, Maine. Hello, Melanie.
Hi, guys. Melanie here. I inherited this beautiful house, southern exposure, and a development that's about 2 or 3 inches of topsoil on top of lots of sand and rocks. And I've got these lovely Siberian irises and these beautiful dark bluish purple bearded irises. And in the spring, when they started coming up, I exposed the rhizome, the bulby root, you know, with the ground soil. I was told that that's what you should do. And I've got these beautiful green fronds, but only about 3 flowers. What can I do to get more flowers?
Well, it sounds like they're newly planted from last year.
Yes, they're very old. They're original from the original house.
So they were there. Yeah. They were there when you got to the house.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
right. Oh, great. Yeah. So when you get to late July or August, you can lift them, dig them up, look through all of the tubers and remove. There are little things called iris borers. Remove any old, soft tuber so that they're clean. If you want to... Some people like to kind of soak them in some kind of insecticide in case there's a borer in there. But you can just look around and look for holes. And then amend that soil that you're going to put them back in. You've got lots of great sandy soil. So those germinators are going to love that, but work in a lot of compost and replant them so that you can and just see those tubers work in some kind of general purpose fertilizer. Usually something with a little more phosphorus is good, but most fertilizers have that. And wait till next year. On those Siberian iris, just cultivating around them, not digging them up, but adding compost and then maybe some fertilizer as well. Those, the only reason to dig them up is because you want to divide them and move them around. They're very happy just as they are.
They're really, they're doing the mounding thing. There's lots of them.
Yeah.
So and you, I sometimes donate, give them away.
Yes, so you could dig up the whole clump.
So many.
You could dig up the whole clump again later in late summer, divide them out, and replant them.
Okay. Hey, Melanie, how's the weather up there in one of the most beautiful states in the country?
We had a pretty cold spring, and right now we're in the mid-90s, which is crazy.
Whoa, that's
it's
crazy
too
talk.
Hot too soon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for the call.
It is a great area.
I really appreciate
the
call.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
See you soon, I hope, up there in Maine. Let's go to Steventown. And Janet, you're on.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Two quick things. One is we've had a portion of a bank that's just been nasty and doesn't grow real life things. So we're filling it in with rocks and boulders. And what I want to know is, do you put netting under it before you put those rocks on?
So you could use a landscape fabric if you wanted to. There's also like different types of like geogrid texture, you know, textural things to kind of help hold that together. I mean, I don't think it's required. It depends on, you know, how steep it is, but a lot of times, okay, when we did landscaping, we would use sometimes fabrics, sometimes to stop the stones from mixing into the soil below them.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yep, in that case, then great. Yep, then a fabric, like a weed fabric, could work for that.
Uh-huh, okay.
Okay.
The other thing is we have moles.
All right.
And I'm trying to figure out what to do with the moles. They're, the holes that they've dug run a whole line along a long ground level deck.
Yep.
And I see them in the morning at one end of the deck, which is probably why they're at that end, because that's over under the feeder for the birds. So I looked up organic stuff and all of that. So
okay.
I'm frustrated. I don't want to kill them necessarily, but I saw babies the other day.
Oh, yeah. They might have to die.
Yep, so
let's see what happens.
So we tend to think, I think that they're not moles. They're actually voles. Because moles you wouldn't see. They're underground, and they're generally eating a lot of grubs, worms, and they make little mounds but not holes, and you wouldn't see them running on the surface.
Uh-huh.
So voles tend to eat more plants, girdle plants, and act more like a mouse that you would see.
Right.
Now, I know Dale Isla has a really great trick for that.
Yeah. The tube of death.
That's right. So what we do, Janet, voles really like to hide in, and so they like to scurry along edges of things. So we put out 4-inch wide pipe, something that you can put a mouse trap in and have the mouse trap still release inside it. And the voles tend to run into these areas, and you just put a set mouse trap about a foot in from each end. And when they run into those, they can't. There's nowhere else for them to go, so they run over the trap, and you get them.
What do you think, Janet? It's a little violent, but it works.
So that's mouse traps at both ends.
Yeah, about 1 foot inside the pipe. It's just the pipe needs to be 4 inches or so big enough so that trap can release. The mechanism can clear without hitting the top of the pipe.
So PVC pipe works?
Yep.
Okay. Janet, thank you very much. Let's go to Brant Lake, New York. And Mike, you're on. It's not a really strong start, Mike. Are you there? Goodbye. I'm so sorry. You waited half an hour. But if you call back in time, we'll get you in. Judith in Southern Connecticut. Hello, Judith.
Hello.
You're on.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Awesome. Okay, we planted 3-4 years ago 2 different varieties of asparagus. We have the Jersey Giant, and we have the Mary Washington. And the question is, do we trim the tops of those when they start to get kind of feathery and look like they're getting a seed head, or do we just leave them alone?
So if it's the type that actually, like the Mary Washington, if it actually has seeds forming on it, it's good to trim out just the seed part, but you want the rest of those fronds to grow, because that's what's going to give you energy to go down to those asparagus crowns to give you asparagus next year. So the Jersey Giant shouldn't be forming those seed heads. That's supposed to be a sterile one. But the Mary Washington, it's good. You don't have to, but it will put a little more energy into that crown if it's not trying to produce seed at the same time.
Awesome. So keep an eye out for the seed heads and trim just those.
Correct. Just the cane, awesome. just the sprout that has the seeds on it.
Judith, thanks a lot for the call. And let's see here. We'll go to Carol in Loudonville. Hello, Carol in Loudonville.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Are you there?
Oh, yes, we are. Welcome. You're here. You're on.
Okay, great. We have two beautiful lilacs. One is white and one is purple. And we try to trim them and keep them under control. But this year we had no purple flowers to speak of. Is this a bad spring for purple lilac, or did we do something wrong?
When did you prune them last year?
Probably mid-season.
So
the flowers were come and gone.
Yeah, so the goal for them, you might have pruned them a little too late, is what I'm thinking, because the time to prune them is a lilac blooms on what we call last year's wood. So as soon as they get done blooming, they're setting up flower buds for the following year. Uh-huh. So if you prune them kind of like, okay, the flowers are spent, that's the time to prune. You can take those spent flowers off too, and if you do, it'll put less energy to seed and more into flower bud production for the following year. But if you prune them like mid-season, you're taking away a good chunk of next year's flowers. So I suspect that's what happened on that one.
What do you think, Carol?
So this year we didn't have many flowers, so should we go right now and start pruning?
Or you could leave them alone. I don't think it's too late yet.
Greg's shaking his head.
I'm sorry, but I would say do not do any pruning.
Yeah, wait till next
this year. You're done, and they should bud up for you next year.
Okay. Well, I was afraid it was a crisis in purple lilac.
No, it's a crisis in timing.
Most likely
the pruning. So next year you should see flowers, and then if you want to shape them or prune them, remember as soon as those flowers are spent, go right back in there, and that's the timing for the pruning.
All right, Carol, thanks for the call. By the way, are some rhododendrons only make flowers every other year?
No, they usually flower every year, but some years you'll see things on cycles. So some years are going to be heavy flower sets. Yeah. Some years you're going to see heavy apple blossoms. Some years you're going to see massive oak acorn production.
So did you see any flower buds form, the big giant buds on the tip?
I don't think so.
So deer
may have browsed
those giant buds.
They might have got them. I suspect
because if they're there and the winter hurt them, they would be there.
They would be
as
there.
Brown things
no,
right now.
No,
I suspect you had some visitors.
You know what? I've had it with the deer. Okay, we've got to do. Greg, you have to come over and set up some kind of traps.
Yep.
Laura in Woodstock. Laura, you're on very quickly.
Okay, I have a Coosa dogwood tree. It's about 20 years old, and 3 years ago it was massively in bloom, and then both last year and this year, just the tops got flowers, and the rest of the tree, no flowers. What's going on? Is it weather, or?
I think it's just a growth pattern, so the top was getting a lot of energy, maybe a little more sun, and so it's able to cycle and make those flowers twice, in a row. Usually it's every other year, heavy year, light year, and the light year can be patchy like that. But then as long as those lower limbs are still looking green and lush and growing well, they should set buds for next year.
Okay.
Okay, it looks great. It looked great last year, and I thought it was because, we had... Here in Woodstock, we had one night where it was 15 below, so I thought maybe that impacted it. And then we had that late freeze in the end of April this year.
Yeah, so true.
I don't think it was either of those things because you would not have had any flowers, right?
Right, you wouldn't have had it at just the top.
So I think it's just they didn't set flower buds. In the late summer, early fall, or even winter, you can look for the flower buds if you really want to. They're definitely look different than leaf buds.
Okay.
Especially with it being so dry last fall. If it was under stress, that might have affected it.
All right, Laura, thanks a lot for the call. And, we only have 15 seconds. Last call will be Steve and Billerica. Steve, you got to make it fast. Why does it always happen when I say you got to make it fast? Sorry, Steve, we have to leave it there. You know what, Fred? How do people find the Landis Arboretum?
We're at landisarboretum.org for the website, and we're located at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York.
Dale Isla Riggs, The Berry Patch.
TheBerryPatch.net. Facebook is The Berry Patch NY, and the farm store will be opening when blueberry season starts in July.
Oh, the blueberry season. All right, Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yeah, Ward's Nursery is at 600 South Main Street in Great Barrington, or wardsnursery.com.
I have been vindicated. Bess in Alford writes in, "Hi, gardening crew. I believe Ray was referring to the Findhorn Eco Village in Scotland, what we used to call a commune and now refer to as an intentional community." See, I was not hallucinating.
And that was Mary?
That was Bess in Alford.
Oh, Bess, okay.
And it's spiritual veggie growing, and they grow enormous. Tomatoes the size of houses. Well, maybe not.
I think the real question is, how did you get onto that channel?
Listen, man, there weren't that many channels back in the 70s. So who knows what? It was probably on public TV. You know, public broadcasting brings you weird stuff all the time, including me. Support comes from the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls. Features ceramic sculptures by modern abstract artist Toshiko Takayasu. On view now through July 19th. Open Thursday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. HydeCollection.org. Well, that was fun. Gardeners, we'll see you in 2 weeks. And thanks to everybody who listened and called in and wrote in. Listen, we have so many calls and so many emails. We do the best we can. That's why we do it every 2 weeks in the warm weather months. We'll be back 2 weeks from today. Thanks to little Mikey Bowen over there in the Master Control. Susie Chekai took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. We welcome back our friend Ellen Gray for a deep philosophical discussion about pies. We'll see you tomorrow.